Hey, wonderfuls. Welcome to episode 548 of the JV Club with my fantastic guest, Kate Welsh. Kate is, oh my gosh, one of those multi-hyphenates where you're like, where do I start? She is a total superstar, a nerd, a writer, a RPG-er, which I love that I didn't think I was covering that when I said nerd, and just Insta friend. Can't wait to do more with her. And I know you're going to love this conversation. It's a really, really great one. Can't think of a better conversation to get us ready for kicking off next week. Not this one that you're waiting. If you're listening to this the week that it drops, next week we'll be diving into Max Fun Drive. You know, there's always a bunch of fun games, chicanery, but in a good way, shenanigans. I don't know. Listen, some of those have negative connotations, but they're such cute words. I can't help but use them anyway. But anyway, we will be looking forward to that. I will be, if you listen to this and on the week that it drops, I'm going to be on the high seas with some of your other friends from Max Fun. I can certainly name drop John Hodgman for one of them. Love the Joko Cruise. Love Max Fun Drive. That's just mushing together two communities that have a ton of crossover and just communities full of the dearest, dearest people. So a lot to celebrate. And certainly I celebrate you for listening to and supporting the podcast. So enjoy this episode with Kate, and I'll talk to you soon. Waste anybody's beautiful and precious time when there could be conversations about airlines to be had for the whole world and not just the two of us. Let's not be selfish with our complaints.
You know, I only fly Alaska, and I understand that they now have a reputation of just sort of sucking people out of windows, but there's no other airline I'd rather get sucked out of.
Isn't that sweet? That's very frankly romantic.
Isn't it? I put that on their marketing.
Wait, does Alaska go everywhere? That's one that I think I always assume doesn't.
They go everywhere, continental, and they just started doing Hawaii a couple of years ago. And
lovely.
I don't think they do a lot of international. So there's that. But yeah, I'm always pleased with Alaska. They even have their little credit card.
And did they buy another? Oh, they bought Virgin.
They bought Virgin. Okay, and I believe they even bought Hawaiian.
Yeah,
they bought Hawaiian too. They've been slurping them up,
leaning up.
Yeah.
All my stuff. I used to work so much in Atlanta through the year on a show that I was on like many, many years ago that all of my, you know, just all of my points are with Delta. So I've been with Delta for a while. But they're, I mean, for a huge airline with problems, I have to say similarly, you know, I guess we just pick our battles. But I typically have like a really positive experience.
This is what my dad is always saying about Delta as well. Yeah. So you and my dad should hang out.
I'd love to. Yes. Actually, I have a little surprise for you. Could you come over to the camera? Kate's going to love this. Oh, it's going to be great.
I don't want to know what that says about your relationship with my father, but I can't blame you. It's amazing. We might start a podcast. We were talking
really?
About this. We just went to Egypt and Jordan together.
Oh, so you went with him. Okay. You may have told me that, but I just knew that you were there.
It was great. We were trying to figure out the last time I spent 3 weeks straight with my father was 21 years ago. Just don't spend that much time with your parents if all's going well.
Yeah,
you know?
That's right.
So we were trying to figure that out, and I just love hanging out with him so much. And I was thinking about doing a podcast basically where I just call him up and he tells me about space news. Because he loves space and I don't follow it at all, but I love listening to him.
Okay, so for a second I thought you were gonna say like he's the president of NASA. Does NASA have a president? I don't know. I'm not sure how it works. I clearly don't know anything about space.
He did work for NASA for a while. He trained astronauts to fly the shuttle.
How cool is that?
Yeah, he's cool. We can honestly talk about my dad during this podcast if you want.
Happily talk about your dad.
I honestly think it'd be amazing to have a conversation with people that was just like, just talk to me about your dad. I don't want to hear about you. I just want to hear about your dad.
I would listen. I think I agree with you. Like, I would listen to a podcast where two people are just talking about one or both of their parents.
Yeah.
Like, and just sort of get a sense, paint a picture for me. Like, I think that would be great. I mean,
that's so
your dad
sweet.
Sounds very like a very interesting person. I think there are probably people who are like, I just don't have an hour in me to talk about my
parent. Don't get me started on my mother, but my dad, like if you have a parent in your life that you want to brag about, come on the show, Dad Brag, and brag about your dad.
Hashtag Dad Brag. And he's retired now.
Yes. Okay. He is. And he brags about it a lot.
All right. Well, I really am going to ask you a couple questions. This will be fun because then we'll find a perfect place to like settle it into your dad when you were in high school. And then we'll it'll sort of naturally fold into your high school experience. Unless you want to talk about your dad's high school experience. If you feel like you are.
I don't know enough about his high school.
Yeah. You may not have the authority to do that.
I really should.
Well, that'll be one of your first episodes on hashtag dad brag.
Hashtag dad brag.
So when you say he taught astronauts to fly the shuttle, does that mean he flew a shuttle, or does that mean that he is like a flight simulation expert?
Yeah, so he was a fighter pilot in the Air Force. He flew F-15s for several years, and then he went from that into training astronauts. I believe he was the emergency procedures instructor, but it was all done in simulator. And he was, I don't know if he still holds this record, but at the time he was the only person who could do 10 out of 10 perfect landings in the simulator. Hashtag dad brag. but yeah, so that's what he always wanted to be an astronaut, but he made it to semifinals a couple times and scrubbed out. He had two things against him. He never went to test pilot school, which is a really big part of being an astronaut. And he is 6'4".
Okay.
And it's hard to squeeze into space.
It turns out. Yeah. Yeah, it's true. And I assume somehow his bones would hurt more. I don't know how space, again, do not know how space works.
See, this is why we need the podcast.
This Dad, is why we need it.
Tell me how space works, Dad.
Okay, so you didn't go to test pilot school. I guess you don't need to go to test pilot school if you're in the Air Force and you can be a fighter pilot. That's its own thing.
You would think. But I guess for the time, I don't know if it's still a qualification even. This was in the 80s. But at the time, the shuttle was considered an experimental vehicle, I guess. So you had to have experience flying experimental vehicles.
Other experimental vehicles. It'd be amazing if it was so he had flown a red wagon with a hot air balloon attached. That's really, as long as it was experimental. He had flown a helicopter while on acid. So a very experimental experience. Yeah.
Very expensive, dangerous experiment.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
He has talked to me about doing parachute training and look at survival wilderness training that you got to go through.
It's
wild. Yeah. They dropped him in the middle of the woods in Eastern Washington, apparently. Whoa. And he just had to survive for a week. And then they get fake POW captured and they put them through torture. They've go through torture and stuff.
That would be my job. It would be I'm an actor. The highest paying gig that brought me the most respect from people was that I was a fake captor for a POW training course through the Air Force. People said it was very convincing.
I'm an actor. I have a few selections. I'd like to.
All of my monologues involve calling someone a maggot. Is that okay?
That's really good. Yeah.
Or maybe that's what you call. That's probably more what you call. Kids that you're training in boot camp or something. Now listen up, you maggots.
You maggots.
Drop and give me 20.
He said it was mostly having to undergo sleep deprivation. And also, he's very tall, as I mentioned. So they had him stand, you weren't allowed to lay down and go to sleep. You were in there for 24, 36 hours or something. He had to stand in a room that was just ever so slightly too small for him.
Oh, no.
Yeah. This is what he recalls as being the worst part of this, torture prep, he had to, crane his head to the side for hours and hours and hours. It does sound bad.
Well, did it happen to be too small of a room, or was it we built this room to the specification of you, if it just being a little too small for you? And if you were 5'4", we would have built it to be 5'2".
That's a great question. I wonder if they get excited. They're like, we got a tall man. Put him in the short room.
Well, so he has done a lot of stuff that, you know, a lot of, I mean, there's a lot of like legend and lore around, you know, people who don't like that. Like you're describing things that like people do just to do because they want to have that sense of achievement. Like, yeah, I didn't even need to do that. I did that as a hobby. Like I went through parachute training just to feel like I was alive.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Exactly. Have you watched the show Alone?
Yes, yes. That's actually very much what was in my head when you said he got dropped off in Eastern Washington.
And yeah, it's like that. It's just he only had to survive a few days instead of this like 30-day dystopian Hunger Games situation that the people on Alone
have you
to
watched
find
like
in.
Multiple seasons of that? Like, have you seen enough of it or you just have a sense of it?
I've watched several, I think I've probably watched 5 or 6 episodes sprinkled across seasons. My husband's obsessed with it.
Okay, got it.
As husbands are, are wont to be. But yeah, he loves watching it. And every time I come in, I'm like, I come in for the monologue where it's some like sweet guy who's like, I love my family so much. Yeah. And this is the only way I can think of to make $100,000 that we desperately need. And I'm like, this is a dystopia.
Yeah. And let me tell you a little story. I hate to spoil it for that person, but that person never makes it all the way through because that's the same sweetheart that's like, I miss my family too much.
I know.
I wanted to make them proud of me. But I love the love that took me out here for them. It's the love that's calling me back home. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's always that person. And I think they put those clips in there to break your heart.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's in, you're right, because it's becoming a formula now after all these seasons. You, as soon as someone's like, I just love my family. I love my baby girls. I send them to sleep. You're like, you're going to be gone in
you
6
need to,
days.
You need, those people need to be erased from your mind if you think that you're going to, you need to believe that there is no one on the earth who gives a
your
shit about you.
Dead.
The one that I have seen a couple of different seasons, and the one that really struck me was there was a season where, and this is a major spoiler, and yet I can't warn anyone what season to avoid because I couldn't tell you which one it was. So feel free to skip ahead 10 seconds, everyone. He had all of this food, and he was so afraid to eat it that he like got himself kicked off because he was so emaciated. So he was kicked off with like a ton of like dried fish jerky, and like he had all of this food. And so that was a real example of like, for some reason that felt familiar to me. Somehow that seemed familiar, that you would be like, I should probably just hold on to this for another day though. Like, I am starving and my body's eating itself, but like, I'm gonna make it longer if I have more food saved. And then the doctors come and they take his weight and they're like, actually no, you're gonna have to leave right now. Like, you really should have eaten more of this food.
Oh my God. There was one. I did not see that guy. That's so sad.
It's like getting voted off of Survivor with an idol. Do you know what I mean? It's the feeling of like, oh, I was doing everything right. Like, I had more than anyone else and I still left. Anyway, go ahead.
Oh my gosh. It was the one with the guy, he hunts a beaver and he's like, he's so excited. He gets this big, fat, juicy beaver. But apparently beavers have like a fatal illness. If you eat them, you die.
Oh no.
So he didn't cure it properly, whatever. He got beaver madness and he got kicked off the show.
Beaver madness.
Yeah.
Which, you know, means different things in different circles.
What do you mean, Janet?
Some guys are like, I think I'd like to have beaver madness. Wouldn't mind going a little crazy with beaver madness. Gross. Go back to the outside. Go back to your tent. Did you inherit any of that, either kind of nature or nurture? Was there any part of you that was like, yeah, I'll go out and camp with like less than I would like to have to camp?
No. Not at all. There's this Werner Herzog clip from a movie he was making in the 70s that's like takes place in the jungle in the Amazon jungle, I think, rainforest. And it's an off-camera scene, or he's just doing this monologue. He's like, this nature is the most disgusting place I've ever been. Everything here is trying to kill you or fuck you, or it's just murder. It's murder and consummation, and it is a terror of, that's how I feel about camping. Honestly, that
Got
whole
it.
Monologue is
Got
exactly
it.
How I feel. I love like going on hikes. I love
yes,
that.
Yeah.
But ask me to sleep in it? No, thank you.
Yeah.
No, thanks. I've done a lot of it. I've like gone to some interesting places. I've gone to like Uganda and Galapagos, and I just got back from Egypt. And every single time I'm like, king size bed, please. Yeah. Thank you. pillows. Can yeah. I have more pillows, yeah. please?
Yeah, there's a real yeah. difference between, yeah. I mean, I feel like I adapt fairly quickly to things that I wouldn't necessarily expect myself to adapt to. But just in my experience of like very, very minimal camping, and I am including like sleeping in the backyard of a friend's house when you're a kid because they have a tent, I feel like even once is too much, but it was 100% more than once. Waking up with the shadow silhouettes of spiders, not even inside the tent, but just like the shadow of several spiders on the roof of the tent. I mean, I would probably be better with it now. I'm better with spiders now than I was a kid. But like as a kid, it felt like going into a haunted house at a carnival. Like this is designed to scare the shit out of you. Mm-hmm. You don't belong here. You know what I mean? Like don't get out of here.
Nature doesn't want you.
Yeah.
No, nature doesn't want you. Yeah, the way you describe it, it almost makes it sound like parents do it to you to warn you against ever going into nature.
It's not even our fault. That's not our fault. They didn't want us. They never wanted us to go.
They never wanted us to go. Have you read, are you into science fiction at all?
Yeah, but okay. I'm trying to think of how many science fiction books I mean, I'm definitely more of like a British detective.
Oh, hell
book,
yeah.
Book reader. But tell me, talk to me.
I just went through an Agatha Christie phase for the first time in my life.
Yeah.
So
pleasure.
I'm with you on that. There is a science fiction book that I love called Children of Time. And it changed me when it comes to spiders for some reason. Like I got to the point with spiders where I was like, you know what? They really are doing their best.
And they are, Kate. And they are.
They are.
Do you have what's your spider situation where you are?
Oh boy. I live in the Pacific Northwest. Yeah. And the spiders, you know how for Halloween decorations, people like put up spooky cobwebs and plastic spiders. I learned here that's because that's the season where the spiders come out for real.
Same in LA. LA. Mm. Mm. I didn't have when I lived in San Francisco. Explain to me how I lived in San Francisco, which is on the way to you in the Pacific Northwest, yet I never saw a big orb weaver like in San Francisco. Never. Not one time. And then I moved down to LA and it's like spider country. And they're beautiful. They're beautiful and they're cool. Do you have the experience of them like building webs like in a your doorway, like a door, like an archway where you're is exactly where my face has to go. My face has to go right where your body is.
This is the agreement that I try to come to with my household spiders. I'm like, bitch, I love you, but you cannot, like this zone, I'm just gonna walk through it and all your hard work is ruined.
Yes.
And I would say we have a pretty solid truce at this point. I have not walked into a spider web in a long time.
They are learning. I wish I could say the same.
Yeah. I feel like you got to go in and out a lot. Like during COVID, I maybe didn't go outside of my door as much as you should. Uh-huh. And so the spiders, I think there was an encroachment.
Okay.
Period.
All right.
Now I'm trying to like go out of my door more. And I think that's helping.
I'm telling you, I don't know how often I would have to do it because these little orb weavers, I can like take my dog for a walk and come back 45 minutes later and there is a gorgeous web that has been spun in that period of time that there's no way we're not going to break. And I feel horrible doing it.
Totally.
And I do a lot of talking to them. There's a lot of talk that's like, hey, what are you doing?
We can't be doing this.
I feel now I'm the bad guy.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yes. You saw me come through here. Did you think I was a big snack? Do you think a big snack for later? Janet, I know you're small, but you're not snack size. Not for a spider.
Not that small. Okay. So, did you grow up in the Pacific Northwest?
No, because my folks are both Air Force. Greg was born in the Philippines, and we kind of grew. We went all over the place wherever they got stationed. Most of my time, my youth was spent in North Carolina, actually.
Oh, nice. Beautiful.
It is beautiful. A lot of spiders, though.
Yeah.
A lot of spiders, a lot of mosquitoes. I don't miss the mosquitoes. A lot of mosquitoes. But yeah, I went to my high school. We were talking about what high school was like.
Yeah.
And I got to go to a boarding school in North Carolina called the North Carolina School of Science and Math.
Oh, cool.
And it was like a, it was just science and math dorks from all over the state. Got to go to this. It was a public school. I don't know if it's changed now. It was a public school, so you didn't have to pay anything, no tuition.
But it was a boarding school.
Test to go in. Yeah.
But where was it getting its fun? That's so impressive.
Yeah, it was a state grant.
Wow.
So they got from the UNC system, they got grant money to run this school because it was basically like a feeder school for the UNC colleges. And so, yeah, I got to go to this nerd school and live there, which was – I honestly was not excited about it until I got there. And I was like, I wanted to be an actor. I wanted to go to the school for the arts in Winston-Salem where you could learn acting. But that was an expensive school. My parents were like, no, you're going to go to the free one. But I still did a lot of acting. I did everything but science and math at this school. Like anything.
I was wondering if they offered anything beyond that. And it sounds they definitely did.
They took full advantage. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Anything that wasn't. Science and math was obviously king. And they had this policy that every hour that you were in class, you had at least an hour of homework. So it was very... Wow. It was very rigorous.
Yeah.
We had like 2-hour labs for science and math. And I got to dissect a lot of stuff, which was cool.
Yeah.
I learned, Janet, my upper limits, academically speaking.
Got it.
I learned them quickly. I came from a high school, like just a generic public school in Western North Carolina, and I was doing great. I was coasting. And I go to the school and I'm like, I'm going to keep doing great. I don't really have to try hard at anything because that's how I am. And as soon as I encountered any kind of adversity, from an academic perspective, I was like, nope, no.
I couldn't be more positive the same would happen to me. I couldn't be more sure how fast I would be like, how fast can I bail on this? This is uncomfortable for me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I have to strive. Not only did I have to strive, but in striving, still experience failure over and over and over.
Oh.
And her name was chemistry.
Oh.
And it gave, you know what I will say, it did cut down on my job options. Like I understood like anything that involves chemistry, I won't be doing it.
Yeah.
Yoink. I was like excited to be everyone at my school before. I was like, you're going to be a doctor. I was like, I know. And then I get into chemistry. I'm like, no, I don't, that's not going to happen for me. That's all.
Yeah.
Life that's just cut away from me. I can't be a biologist. I really wanted to work with animals. There's all this stuff that I wanted to do in chemistry. Even at like multiple tutors, moments of like, oh my God, I get it.
Right.
And then on the test, nope, I don't get it.
Interesting.
I just simply could not do it. I had never experienced that before.
Because I have very positive memories of chemistry, but I am really thinking about how much I loved my chemistry teacher.
That's nice.
And I mean, but I couldn't tell you. I mean, I know I got an A, but like, I couldn't tell you that I was good. I feel like he was good. Do you know what I mean? I feel like he was a great teacher and somehow worked out for everybody. And if I had been with any other teacher, I would probably have been happy to get a C. But when you said that, I was like, I loved chemistry. And then I was like, Janet, hold on. That's disingenuous. That's a disingenuous. You're not, you didn't love, you loved your teacher. You loved your teacher and you're happy that you didn't get a bad grade because he helped you get a good grade. Like,
exactly.
I think that's the reality.
That's good, though.
Yeah.
Do you think that was your favorite teacher that you ever had?
He's close, although my dad was my honors English senior year teacher. So I definitely cannot, at the risk of it getting back to him, I don't know who would tell him this, and he does not listen to this podcast. I couldn't possibly say that he wasn't also a favorite teacher, but he was. He was great. But I think, Mr. Matz, I think, you know what I think it was? Like, I loved my English teachers, but I had a natural aptitude for it. I'm sure because of both my parents being language-oriented teachers and you know, very passionate about writing and all that kind of stuff. And math and science were very hard for me. And so I think, like, he stand, like Mr. Math stands out because it was in a subject that I don't think of myself as having an aptitude in, and still was able to be like, I did well. And that's all like tied up and tangled with how much I loved him as a teacher. It was like, it also kind of means more that I did better than, you know, my sophomore English teacher, who I absolutely loved. And, you know, like, I feel like he introduced me to like half the stuff I still like now in writing and poetry and stuff. But there's part of me that's like, but I mean, it was English. I mean, I was going to do it.
Yeah. I don't have to try very hard.
It had English going for itself.
Have you ever thought about reaching out to Mr. Matz?
Mr. Matz knows how much I love him. I have not talked to him in a very long time, but there was that my dad had like a party where he asked. It was like a show off my daughter party maybe 15 years ago. Where he was like, I'd like, you're coming into town, I'd like to invite some of my friends to see how great you turned out, but I'm also open to inviting other grown-ups that like, that you also like. And so I can't,
so
I don't remember who else, I just remember being like, see if Mr. Matz will come. I guess I had a little crush on him, if I'm being honest, but it was a pretty benign crush.
Yeah, of course.
You know, but he was very funny. But he was also very conservative, and that was my, that was one of my first lessons in like, oh, you can really like someone and you can adamantly disagree with their politics. Mm. And I probably shouldn't, he probably shouldn't have been as vocal as he was about his politics, but but that was like, but in retrospect, I'm like, you know, that was a good example for me because, you know, I think I did live, even being from Arizona, which people think of as being this like very, you know, red or at least purple state, like Tucson, Arizona is extremely liberal. And so I just know he's like, I feel like he's the only Republican outside my like my mom's parents. I feel like he's like the only Republican I knew in my real life and was like fascinated by it. Like, how wow. could you think this? So it was good. You know what I mean?
Yeah. He sounds like he was a good teacher. You
he
learned a
great.
Lot of incidental things from him
yeah.
that weren't necessarily chemistry related.
Yeah. And then he taught anatomy, and there was no reason for me to take anatomy at all, but I took it, and I retained so much information. I remember muscle groups and like, you know, stuff I have no need to know now. I'm not like a PT or anything like that, but like wow. it really stuck. How did
as a gift. That's so cool.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely like was. That. If you need to talk about like, you know, your latissimus dorsi or whatever, I could loosely tell you where it is. So here's what I'm fascinated by. Again, the public school that is also a boarding school. Like, why did it need to be a boarding school? I don't know. That's a weird question to ask. But I think I'm so mesmerized by the idea of a public school also being a boarding school. It's just fun to me that they were like, look. Like, was it up in the middle of some mountains or something?
No, it's in Durham, where Duke University is and really close to UNC Chapel Hill. So it's kind of in like a collegiate research triangle, they call it there in North Carolina. And so it was near a bunch of places to get educated afterward. And so familiarizing yourself with the area might have been good. It was an old hospital building, like grounds.
So for sure there were like rumors about ghosts.
For sure. Yeah, absolutely. They called it a mental hospital when I was a kid. I don't know if it was a psychiatric place, but like
it's so much
juicier if
it was.
Oh my God, I know, right?
Yeah.
It was a beautiful, beautiful building, set of buildings. And with like underground tunnels and stuff.
Oh, what a dream.
It was sick. It was sick. Yeah. Yeah. It was and like after class. We just all had the run of the place, and there were honestly extremely few adults. The teachers did not live on campus. We had an adult with each hall that of kids, each dormitory, that lived on the dorm with us, and we were mostly there to be like counselors and break up fights and make sure that everybody was, you know, in bed when they were supposed to be.
Sure.
But like the rest of the campus after the teachers went home. Baby, it was party time.
Oh my God.
And I did everything that you weren't supposed to do under the guise of like still being like a really nerdy kid. I never did drugs or any.
Give me some examples of what that means.
Oh, I, you know,
if there
sex.
Were no drugs.
Like
okay,
sex.
All right. Okay.
So like a lot of like weird stairwells.
God, there was, I mean, like, it's they're just setting you up for that based on everything you're describing.
We were all, we're like 15 to 18 year olds all together, extremely unsupervised. It's incredible that there wasn't a nursery there, frankly. Like, it was crazy. Also, like, sneaking out and like the little things you're supposed to do. I just never gotten a chance to rebel. I was such a goody two shoes before that, and so I got to this place and I had this freedom to rebel and figure out who I actually was as a person, which was not an academic person, which was where I thought my life was headed. I ended up loving, honestly, we had this extracurricular event about once a quarter, maybe, called Coffee House, that was hosted by two students, and it was essentially a talent show, like an after-hours talent show. And multiple times, my friends and I would write comedy sketches and perform them, skewering the school, like just satirizing our school experience. And we got such good reviews. Like, people, teachers would like show up to watch this stuff at like 7 p.m. It was really fun. It was like my first ever like official comedy gig, I guess, was those coffee house sketches. So that was really fun doing that in high school. And drama, of course, doing as much as I could, trying out for every play. And I think I directed some one act stuff. I was as involved in the theater as I could be. I loved it so much. Basically everything but science and math.
How big was the school overall?
I think there, again, this was at the time, this is 2000 to 2002. The whole school was probably 250 students.
Okay, yeah.
Really, really small.
All right.
So we all knew each other really well. Everybody saw each other every single day. There are a ton of people ended up getting married, and we just had our 20-year reunion back in Durham, which I flew out for.
Yeah.
And I remember I got on the flight to go out there, and the flight attendant was chatting with me. She's like, "What are you heading to North Carolina for?" I was like, "My 20-year high school reunion." And she just burst out laughing. She's like, "Are you serious?" I was like, "Yes, I'm going across the country to see my old high school friends."
That's
but
not
so many
worthy people go to their 20. I had to talk to this person.
Yes. No, I felt shamed. She probably had a crummy high school experience, as so many people did, but I loved my high school experience. And so going back out, and my husband came with me because I told him all these stories about this place. I was like, "You have to see it in person." A shitload of my class turned out for the 20-year, and we've all scattered to the winds, you know. I bet there were 75 of us out of a graduating class of like maybe 110, 120.
Yeah, that's a very good
turnout.
A good
chunk of us.
Yeah.
And like, it was just like no time had passed, you know. Everybody's on their path, doctors and lawyers and film executives and everything else. And they've all just done such cool stuff. And I don't know, just like a more fascinating group of people you couldn't find.
It sounds like it. The feeling of like, I mean, I've not spent that much time revisiting places where I was educated, but for sure when I go back to like, especially the college I went to in Northern Arizona, I mean, it is the very much like the sensory memory, like I get sort of this like flushy, like adrenalized feeling, and, you know, so many just like, just a sort of wall of experience, kind of a palimpsest where it's like nothing is, it's not even one specific thing. You just are just kind of swimming in this place of, and so the idea of like having that, but having been a hormonal teenager, talk about making an impression. I mean, that place, I'm sure when you went back, you were just like, I wish I could even express the intensity of like what it feels like to be in a place that you lived, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's very intense. And you're kind of, what you're describing is, palimpsest is such a good word, by the way. Oh my God. But the hormonal memory comes flooding back, right?
Yeah.
Like that sense of like, I was going through some stuff.
Hell yeah.
When I was at this school, and it's all so vivid.
Yeah.
When you go back to the places where it happened, and so little has changed.
Yeah.
For the alumni weekend, they send all the kids home that are currently attending the school. So everybody just had their run of the place. And so we were just like running around like 16-year-olds again, looking like, oh my God, remember this happened here? Oh my God. And so my husband's like patiently going through all this with me.
I was about to say, like, is that a thing where like, it feels so important and is so important for you to be able to like, now he has a point of reference. But I'm sure there were so many moments where he was like, this isn't really...
He loves like Dead Poets Society, like those like 80s movies about boarding schools are very much his thing.
Yeah.
So to actually go to a boarding school where that had a very 1980s movie experience, I think that dorked him out a little bit. So he got his
good
joy
for him.
It.
Good for him. And what about the Sikhs? Everybody's stuck in one place together. It's a small group. Is there like the awkwardness? I mean, I guess for me, my worry would be that the downside would be like you break up with someone and you're also just watching them like fall in love with someone new, fall in love, quote unquote, what, but you know, to be like, well, I guess I can't, I mean, I'm just, I have front row seats for this. Like, there's no getting around that. Was there stuff like that happening? And did you have to go through that? Or did you put someone through that? Or both?
No, I did it. I did it. I did it and I went through it. I think going through it was more interesting, though. There was this boy I fell totally in love with. I just turned 16. And he was one of my chemistry tutors, and he was just so cute and sweet and funny and had this like beautiful, like Southern drawl. And we dated for maybe like 4 months. It felt like forever.
Oh, it is forever back then.
We're like talking a lot about like when we get married, this kind of thing. And then he just like, I guess got the ick at some point and just started kind of like drifting away, and we broke up. I said, to this day, there is some element of the feeling that all of my relationships have kind of been a series of rebounds from that first one. Everything is just me reacting to, I still like haven't processed how devastated I was to get my ass broken up with by this boy. and I mean... He's texted me this morning, so like, who's laughing now?
Well, I have another surprise for you. Kate's dad, could you bring in that Kate's? Okay, I don't even know their names. That might ruin the surprise a little bit. I mean, I think just when you said that, like the thing that sort of resonated for me right away was just the feeling. Like the reason that makes sense to me is, there is nothing more alarming than like really not knowing why something changes and not knowing if it's something you did. And it's almost worse if it isn't anything you did, because then it's like, where does my identity fit into your attraction to me? Like, was it a fluke that you liked me to begin with? Is that where the fluke is? Like, am I trash and you just figured that out? Or was I fabulous, but you just realized I wasn't fabulous enough and I haven't changed, but I'm not enough anymore? Or did I do something that I can't undo? Like, the powerlessness and the vulnerability of just having someone, you know, pull the rug out from under you really is like... It's just very traumatic.
It's super like, traumatic.
Because you don't know what to do with that.
Right. How do I learn from this experience?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like there's nothing to be learned from someone's sort of arbitrary taste changing. It couldn't have possibly been me. I was, and I still am, to be fair. I was a lot when I was a teenager. I was a lot. And the idea that any boy would have tolerated how much lot I was. At that age, like 4 months, God bless him. God bless him.
I look because at of your emotional, then, like because you, because you were all over the place, because
I was all
were,
over the place. Yeah. Hormones were all over the place, but also hadn't figured out the anxiety, depression situation either.
Yeah.
So I was a little swingy on that.
Yeah.
Hadn't started any kind of therapy, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, there was a lot going on in the old noggin that hadn't really been addressed.
Yeah.
And now I am in, you know, I'm medicated, I'm therapized, I'm much more, and I'm still a lot is the thing. Like to be an unmedicated, untherapied 16-year-old with crazy hormones who also is out from under the umbrella of her parents for the first time in her entire life and figuring out that she has a personality.
Yeah.
It was
a lot.
It was a perfect storm.
It was a perfect storm. but like also let's not trade anything for those experiences.
No,
were you keeping a journal or anything? Were you like a poetry writer? Were you like, yes, I work on my sketches. That's where my satire comes out. But I also have deep feelings that music, I need songs that understand me that I can listen to feel like seen and heard.
It was a lot of Linkin Park. But no, I was keeping I did Perfect. Listen to Linkin Park was my CD on repeat. I remember it vividly. Yes, Janet, I did keep a journal. You keep asking me these questions. I'm like, it's going to sound like we practiced this ahead of time. But I suppose you've gotten some reps with these questions. I kept a journal. I kept a journal online, actually, Janet. And at some point in my senior year, some of my fellow students found it.
So this was not like a blog where you were like, if anyone happens to stumble on this, let them. It was more like it never occurred to you that somehow.
No, because I thought I had anonymized it really well, but apparently I did not. It wasn't like my name. It wasn't like Kate Welch, diaryland.com. It was like a pseudonym. I never like named names, I don't think.
Yeah.
But there was this event. Oh, man, we're going to have to – Uncle Jokes is going to leave the room for a second. There was this event that happened in my senior year where a friend who – she'd been my friend, my best friend all through junior year. And again, all of this is so intense because it's a boarding school. We all live together. We all know each other very intimately. She started dating a boy that I hated. And they became like very in couple prison, you know, only wanted to hang out with each other. And so all of us were kind of like, ugh, all right, well, they're doing their couple thing and it's gross. But the rest of us are hanging out. And so she and I drifted apart. They broke up and she attempted to unalive herself. And before the morning that we found out, it was a school-wide announcement. And they didn't tell us what it was. They were like, everybody, you're not going to class. You're going to the auditorium for an announcement. And it just felt really weird. Like it was totally out of the ordinary. And I guess I had time to stop at the computer lab and write my diary entry that morning because I remember, and I've gone back and reread this entry many times. It's like, there's a weird meeting being called today. And it feels like, I was really into musicals. It feels like the scene in Evita, movie Evita, where at the very beginning, Ava Perone has just died, but nobody knows yet. They're all watching a movie. They stop the movie reel. Everybody gets really mad. They're like, hey, I'm putting my movie back on.
Uncle but Argentinian,
you know. And then somebody comes out and he's like, Ava Perone has died. And everybody starts crying. I was like, it feels like that moment. Like everybody's like chaotic and like, what the hell?
Yeah.
And kind of mad because they had plans, you know, stuff that they needed to do.
Yeah.
And then we go. So I write that. I post it. I'm like, on my way to the auditorium. And I find out that this event has occurred. And it was just, it was one of the most terrifying moments of my life. And then I went back and wrote another entry in my diary. And I was like, it was her, my friend, who I had been making diary entries about the whole previous year because she was my best friend, you know?
Yeah.
So, I think probably that is what helped them find my diary because it's a very specific event.
Like,
I don't know,
you
man.
Know what I mean?
Boys.
Like, yeah.
Boys. The internet was a much smaller place back then. Uh-huh. 2001, I think, the winter of 2001. There were like 75 websites at that time. And it's just a matter of time, I suppose.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Intense. There's so many intense things. Like everything was intense, but then also so magnified.
Yeah.
By the boarding school experience of it.
Of course. Well, and you bring up Dead Poets Society, and of course that's the same. I mean, I think when that feels like, I don't want to say risk because I certainly am not advocating against boarding schools or anything like that. But just based on my experience, again, going to a public school, a public high school that certainly was not a boarding school, and still feeling on the worst days, feeling totally trapped, you know, really just not thinking. I just had this conversation with someone recently where I was like, it never occurred to me that like I could leave my school. Not that I needed to. I mean, I was fine in my other than all of my internal like brain chemistry stuff and all of the heartbreak that anyone could go through as a teenager. I was OK. But, you know, when I talk to people who are like, I don't know, I just wasn't very happy there. So I just switched schools. It just never occurred. Like, it never would have occurred to me that I could take that kind of personal license and control over my life at that age. I just didn't feel like that was not present for me. And so, you know, it felt like such a bold move to like skip class, you know, much less like the idea of being like, I need to assert that I need to be in a different place. And so the idea of having that and having it more of a 24/7 and then having a relationship end and just feeling like, you know, I can't face this. I can't face this even one day. I can't even get through this for one day. I get it. And the lesson here is you can face it and you can get through it.
Turns out, yeah, you can.
Know,
you
might, but I understand. I feel so much empathy for young people who, you know, ideate in certain ways. And it's such a cliche because, you know, you get to the age where you're like, oh, no, I've crossed over into the age where I desperately want to help people and I want to be able to, like, implant that information. And I fully remember so perfectly adults being like, it does get better, though. It does. And you're like, you don't know me. Like, that's exactly. It's such an evil cycle to be a part of. It feels like karmically just evil to, you know, to be like, but I get it now. Fuck.
I know. This has happened to me so many times.
You know,
I'm 39. I'll be 40 this year, this December. And I've gotten to the point where I'm like, oh my God, I have pearls of wisdom and I have young people in my life.
Yeah.
I can help them.
Yep.
No, you can't. You can't, it turns out. No one's going to listen to you just like you didn't listen to anyone.
Yeah.
To your point about having to deal with those heartbreaks, what we did not have when I was a kid was social media.
Yeah.
To be able to like have to see people moving on in their happiest moments. Yeah. Right, like their
pretend happiest moments.
That's what I mean. Yeah, like they're happy. Their happiness real of like those moments, and to feel the because I could see my ex walking around by himself, looking like a loser sometimes, and I was like, like you're not gonna post. You don't post that on social media,
right?
So you are under the impression that you're the only sad person, and you're just not. Everyone is so sad, at least a little bit sometimes.
Agreed.
So everybody hurts sometimes, as they say. Yeah. Yeah, man. High school.
Okay, we're going to take a break. I will be back after a word from our wonderful buddies at Maximum Fun.
Back for another game.
You know it.
What's going on?
Just one more week till Max Fun Drive.
Hard to believe. It's been a heck of a year since the last one. We're now a worker-owned co-op. We raised $50,000 for charity last year.
And we've added a bunch of awesome new shows. But do you think we're ready to do it again?
Absolutely. Lovely new gifts are lined up. The episodes will be amazing. And wait till everyone hears the bonus content.
Yeah, plus they know to go to MaximumFun.org/newsletter, so they're getting all the news. Oh, like that meetup day is on Thursday, March 21st.
Then what's bothering you?
Me? Oh, nothing. We're all set for Max Fun Drive to start on Monday, March 18th. I just didn't want you to see this coming. Check.
What? Hang on.
Most of the plants humans eat are technically grass.
Most of the asphalt we drive on is almost a liquid.
The formula of WD-40 is San Diego's greatest secret.
Zippers were invented by a Swedish immigrant love story.
On the podcast Secretly Incredibly Fascinating, we explore this type of amazing stuff.
Stuff about ordinary topics like cabbage and batteries and socks.
Topics you'd never expect to be the title of the podcast. Secretly Incredibly Fascinating.
Find us by searching for the word secretly in your podcast app.
And at MaximumFun.org.
I got to get into this MASH game with you. Otherwise, I'll keep you here for a billion of them.
I love talking to you about this stuff. This
I'm so glad. I know. I certainly don't want it to be over, but I also, I can't make you live there forever in a snow globe with me. Okay. All right. So I'm going to go. Okay. So we're mashing here. We are creating this kind of really ideal, wonderful alternate life that you will have access to immediately. It's 100% guaranteed.
Excellent.
The first category I'd like to do with you is, well, I'd love to hear three sci-fi environments that we are enabling you to jump into whenever you want to. You're not like reliving the plot of whatever that thing is, but whatever world that's been built in these three, I don't want to say properties, that sounds super commercial, but these three worlds, you can go into whenever you want. Three.
Okay, science fiction. Science fiction is often dystopian, but I'll just like lean into it. I love the world of Blade Runner.
Great.
Again, very dystopian, but I just find it, I love the vibe, I love the rain.
Oh, same.
I'm going to count Pandora from Avatar. Yeah! It's a science fiction world. Oh, it's very 100%. Beautiful. I love
it's
it.
It's an actual world. It. What are you talking about?
Yeah, no, there, you can go there. You can go with enough time and money.
Yeah. I mean, I thought you would say Children of Time because that is what spurned my thinking about this, but also no.
There's too many spiders. You're like, I love, if I could go into Children of Time and I am a spider,
well,
can you write that down?
Yeah.
Children of Time, but I'm also a spider. Yes. Yes. Thank you.
Done. 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 Okay, great. All right. Next one, three foods that in this world, either, you know, it's this beautiful, wonderful flavor, but it's something that you had long ago and far away and you've never been able to like have that same flavor. Or it could just be something that you're allergic to, but you wish you could still eat, or something you just wish you could eat a ton of without ever feeling sick because you just love the taste so much. Three things. I'm taking away all of those negative ramifications. Everything is like on an equal plane. So whenever you feel any of these three things, snap your fingers and you've got them. Three.
Almond croissants.
Oh my God. Yes.
I'm gluten intolerant these days. So
I need to point you in the direction of the Bear Claw at Mariposa Bakery in San Francisco. It's the equivalent of an almond croissant. Of course, it's a little denser because it's a Bear Claw, but the almond paste and the bread and all of that is absolutely checks all the almond croissant boxes. So
okay.
Make that happen for
Mariposa.
You.
I would say like full blown ice cream, heavy cream, custard ass ice cream.
Great.
Let's see. I'm not allergic to anything. But, you know, I didn't used to enjoy it, but now occasionally, again, because I'm the gluten, I can't drink beer.
Yeah.
I think I'd enjoy being able to drink beer.
Just kick back with a beer.
Right.
I'm going to
crack
into
a cold one with the boys. Brewskis. Yeah. Brewskis, definitely.
That's the flavor we're looking to capture when we talk
exactly.
about cracking open a brewski. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Great. Yeah. You know, I enjoy drinking beer and then... For the same reason, when I started having like horrible stomach problems and stuff, now that's one of those things that I can't disassociate from the feeling of my stomach feeling like it's going to explode. And I resent that. I'm like,
yep.
You can give me back the memory, the positive memory of like just drinking a beer. I don't have to, if I'm fantasizing about it already, why are you going to add the bloat? Like, that's mean.
It's so rude. I know.
Okay. All right, next category, let's do three places in the world that you would love to have another home if I can just kind of teleport you there whenever you want.
Yeah.
You have to sit on that plane.
Rural Japan.
Great.
I think South Island of New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
And South of France.
Great.
Yeah.
I feel like I visibly relaxed as you were describing each of those places. I was like, had you said, and for me, those are the relaxing places. Like, if you had said, like, a hot beach, just a chair by the beach, I'd be like, that's not relaxing to me. I'm stressed out. But
yep.
Everything you described, that is where I want. Yeah. Just Give me that. Okay. Next one, let's do three. This is all due respect to your wonderful husband. This is MASH. I don't know if he even exists in this alternate universe. I don't know if your paths are ever going to cross. So you're going to have to make do with, they can be people from fiction, cartoons, video games. It can be someone from an era long ago. And somehow we're transporting that person at the age that you would like them to be into your reality. Three romantic partners, not even life partners if you don't want them to be. Three.
I would say Garrus from Mass Effect.
Great.
Kate Blanchett.
Yeah.
And I guess I should go with a human man. There is somebody recently who I've been like, he's the only man
he's the
allowed
only human
anymore.
Man.
I might be Pedro Pascal. That seems so overdone, but I think he's the only man allowed.
Understood.
Yeah.
I mean, when it's an irrefutable, when it's somebody irrefutable like that, like, what are you going to do? Ignore it? No. Be honest. Great.
Exactly.
Okay. Next one, let's do three. I would love to do three. Three places. And I don't know if it's like, you'll know better than me if you can come up with, if you can conjure any of these. I don't know if it's going to be in a different country. I don't know if it's going to be down the street. I don't know if it's going to be somewhere, just like some places in the U.S. I don't know if you don't even know where it is, but you want it to be in a castle. But I would like three places that we're going to situate you for like a 2-week boarding school for grown-ups scenario. It's like summer camp, kind of, if you want to think of it that way. But it kind of it gives you that, like, you'll kind of end up with a sort of boarding school thrill.
Okay.
But as an adult.
I just recently went to see my very first play in the West End in London.
Mm.
I feel like a West End London theater with like an intensive
great
acting boarding school for 2 weeks would be freaking amazing.
Great. Love it.
I'm also a huge Downton Abbey fan, so I think Highclere Castle.
Oh, hell yeah.
And, gosh. Hobbiton.
Yeah! Are you kidding me? With the caveat that they have to furnish the
yes.
hobbit, little hobbit holes.
The homes, yes.
When you open the door, yeah. I need to see furniture. I can't see like a rolled up piece of AstroTurf like you showed me when I was at Hobbiton. Don't do that. Don't ever let anyone see that ever again. I hope I was the last person to ever find out that there aren't hobbits living comfortably in each
that's
one of those
so
homes.
Messed up.
Right?
That's so messed up. That's like seeing the like Disney underground jail or something.
Yeah, totally.
Just shattering the mystery.
Totally. Why did they do that to me? Okay. Next category. Give me three people who are going to teach you something. So it could be like someone who's just at the top of their field, who's going to become your tutor in blah. It could be, you know, doing kind of an acting intensive as part of, you know, your boarding getaway, although you may not get that one, so it'll be independent of that. But like, you know, somebody whose craft you admire, and it could be, you know, any walk of life, any skill, really anything, but three different people that you would like to have teach you something.
It's got to be the first one that came to mind is Jane Goodall.
Great.
I did her masterclass. It was stunning. It was just basically a lecture about her life.
How lovely.
Tim Robinson.
Great.
Have you ever had him on your podcast?
No. And we all have almost had him at Sketchfest like three times. And then something happens with his schedule and it's like yanked away from us. I'm like, come on.
God, what a gem.
Yes.
I just started watching Detroiters. Obviously, I've watched I Think You Should Leave a million times. But I love that man.
Great. Agree.
I feel like I want somebody to teach me how to dress really well.
That's fun.
Not Anna Wintour, but maybe Anna Wintour. That kind of thing.
She's not going to be a bee to you.
No, she'd be nice.
It's part of
she's
fantasy. Thrilled. She's delighted. She's delighted to do that. Delighted
okay, yes,
to
yes.
do that.
Yes.
Okay. Great. All right. Okay. Second to last one. Let's do three campaigns that are set in the most unlikely of places that you're going to go on, whether it's with, you know, some faster Purple Worm buddies or any other group of campaigners. That doesn't matter as much as just like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm doing a campaign set at blank three.
Okay. A campaign set in the internal organs of Matthew Lillard, I think would be really wild.
I can agree with you that that would be really wild.
Like, just a Magic School Bus campaign, you know? It's, we should all get one.
Yes.
Gosh, this one's so hard because it's been, the possibilities have been plumbed so thoroughly. Maybe a campaign set in like a neighborhood that contains all of our childhood homes or something.
I love wild. That.
That'd be really interesting.
Oh no, I love that.
Just go through some trauma and pack it together.
Yes.
I think I'd also really enjoy a campaign where we're all birds.
Yeah.
And it takes place in the sky. And on the treetops.
Great.
I would enjoy it.
Yep. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. These are brilliant answers. I can't wait for any or all of them to come true. How we're going to make the internal organs thing happen, not sure. Maybe we're not there with the technology yet, but we'll get there.
It's fine. Yeah.
Okay. And then final category. Let's do three. I'm trying to think if there's any like classics I skipped in my enthusiasm to come up with these new ones. Let's do three. I mean, would you like to visit other places in time if you were in a sort of bubble and you're just like an observer? You're just getting to see for yourself like the unimaginable or the imaginable. Like if you want to see the, you know, you want to see Studio 60, that's a Aaron Sorkin TV show. If you want to see Studio 54, now who's a nerd? If you'd like to see the make-believe sets of the not-funny sketch comedy show inside of the show Studio 60, my next campaign is set inside the set of Studio 60. Oh, no.
Oh my God. Oh, I'm sweating. I'm laughing so much. I think there's some spots I'd like to go in time.
Great. Give me three.
It's on my mind because of my recent trip, but I would just love to go back in time to when Petra, the city of Petra, was at its heyday.
Oh yeah.
Like I am so fascinated because there's we just went and I didn't realize this, but Petra, when you see pictures of Petra, it's all of the like beautiful carved facades that look like Greek temples.
Yeah.
And there's not much beyond them. They were like tombs. But what I didn't realize is Petra is like 12 square miles of a city that is almost entirely buried. Like it's truly buried. And you can see as you like, you can climb up, you can overlook this place. And you can see these rolling green hills studded with rocks, but then occasionally you'll see like what are clearly the tops of buildings sticking out from those hills. And you're like, why aren't they digging it up?
Yeah.
Money, you know, it costs money to do that. But it's wild to think like someday that'll be unearthed again.
Yeah.
Probably not in my lifetime, but like someday they will dig it all out and they'll see it again. I find Petra and the Nabataeans to be a super interesting time period.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
Sorry, that was a very genuine, earnest answer.
What impression have you gotten that I wouldn't want that?
My Please. Next answer is there was, I think it was probably like 1975, my father and his sister went to see Steve Martin at the boarding house in San Francisco. And they got his autograph, and it was this very embarrassing moment for my aunt because my dad went up to him, and when my dad talks to people that he's like trying to impress, he drops his voice like several octaves.
Like Elizabeth Holmes, how charming.
Very much like Elizabeth Holmes, yeah. And so apparently my father went up to Steve Martin with a glossy headshot and was like, hello, Mr. Martin, could I get your autograph? And I could do a really good Elizabeth Holmes, by the way.
I feel like I can too. Uh-oh, this can be a fun new show.
Let's go.
It's going to be amazing.
It's going to be really amazing.
We're going to change the world.
But he said, we're going to, with a single drop of blood. So he says, could I get your autograph, Mr. Martin? And Steve Martin goes, sure, Biff. And signs it. And he's like, it's to my sister, who's very embarrassed at this point. And so he's like, what's her name? And he said, Susan. And Steve Martin, in like loud enough for the whole club to hear, goes, dear Susie, thanks for the you-know-what. Love, Stevie. And my aunt is just dying of embarrassment. And I want to go back in time and see that happen.
Yeah, you do.
I'm coming. Oh, my God. Okay, beautiful. All right, what's your final one?
My final one. Gosh. I think I'd like to see like a really killer volcano eruption.
Ooh.
Like a big like boom. Yeah. One of the big ones. Big volcano. Big volcano.
Big volcano.
Yeah. Maybe Hawaii, because I like Hawaii.
Hawaii. Okay, great. All right. Give me a word that you would want to appear somewhere in the description of the hashtag dadbrag podcast. I got in my own way on that one. Really thought I was going to get through it without stumbling. Made it through the hard part. Couldn't say the word podcast.
You were still congratulating yourself.
I was. It was hubris.
In the single word.
You'll find it in the description of that podcast. You want to make sure you include this word in that description.
I'm being earnest again, but...
Uh-oh, that's it. That's what it is. Maybe it's earnest.
I think maybe it's earnest.
It's not a snarky podcast. It's a genuine, earnest dad brag.
I think
brag.
It's very earnest, yeah.
Okay, that's it. That's the word that was just sitting in there waiting to come out, and then, yeah, perfect. Okay. Okay, all right. I am going to use that word to come up with your 100% guaranteed MASH universe. This is a great opportunity for you to plug anything that you would like to. Tell people where to find you. Sure. All that good stuff. And then we'll come back and we'll have these results.
Magnificent. I think the big thing, you can find me on Instagram. I'm barely there, but it's Kate Welch with 4 H's at the end. But the big thing that I want everyone to know about is that my friends and I have just, in the last few months, launched a whiskey brand.
Ooh!
That is being spearheaded by Matthew Lillard, your friend and mine.
Yeah.
And we've aimed it at fantasy and D&D nerds. So
what a need to be filled that people some people knew they needed, some people didn't know they needed, but everyone's going to realize they needed it.
It's so good too. We have an incredible team. We just launched our second bottle. It's called the brand is called Quest's End Whiskey. And we just launched Rogue. We sold out of Paladin twice, was our first release. And Rogue just came out just as of recording yesterday.
Nice.
So yeah, questsendwhiskey.com. And the reason I'm involved with it is each bottle comes with a chapter of a fantasy story about the character that is also tied into this big fantasy epic that I'm writing. So it's got a little reading material with it, but most importantly, it is just delicious whiskey.
Great,
it's very very drinkable.
Oh my God! Okay, well, I gotta get me some, and I'm not even really a whiskey drinker, but
yeah, listen, it's real good, girl.
I'm about to be. Okay, well, I have these results. I'm feeling pretty damn good about them.
Yes,
I'm gonna go ahead and start with the beautiful setup that you just gave me by saying I'm hoping. And I think you'll agree with me on this, and I feel fairly confident, that the campaign begins with everyone in a tumbler of whiskey that Matt Lillard chonks down his gullet.
Yes!
And thus begins your adventure in the internal organs of Matthew Lillard.
Perfect.
I guarantee those of you who buy the first 3 bottles of this whiskey that you will drink it and magically be transported to a campaign inside Matt Lillard's body. I can't.
Yep.
Don't.
I support that completely.
Just, you know, don't at me, but that may happen. It may happen. All right. So congratulations on that. That is very, very fun indeed. I also want to congratulate you on your ability to, in a very different sort of mood, dive into the world of Blade Runner whenever you want, whenever you want to feel that feeling, see those blinking neon lights, hear that amazing synthesized but yet still timeless music.
Yes.
You can access that whenever you want. When you are there or not there and you just want to knock back a cold brewski and talk about good times, you can have it with zero ramifications. Nothing bad going to happen to you. It's hard for me to imagine you drinking that beer with your style guru, Anna Wintour.
That's but part maybe, of the deal, though, is that she like she cuts loose with me.
She cuts loose. Like we, she cut, yeah, her she, hair. She's going to have so many hairs out of place. No one's going to even recognize who she is because her hair's going to be all towsley, a little kittenish.
But that's, I mean, isn't that, that's so freeing for her. Like to be able to just.
She's gaining a lot
crack open a cold one, get a little messy, let her hair down. Yes. Nobody has to recognize her. She can really be herself.
I agree. I'm on board. I don't know if you're doing this at this, you know, is she coming with you? I don't know. Or are you just going to regale her with stories of your time in your 2 weeks at Highclere Castle?
Oh, she's coming with.
Sort of, yeah, right? I mean, yeah, for yeah. your grown-up boarding school adventure, I feel like she would do just fine in that scenario. But I don't want, here's what I'm going to say. Before you commit to bringing her with you, let me just let you know that the partner that you could be bringing with you is Cate Blanchett.
Oh,
goodbye, Anna.
Wait,
goodbye.
I have to decide? Oh, my God.
I guess you can bring them both. I guess you can bring them both. And you can also go with, without them, whatever you want, to the South Island of New Zealand, where we have a beautiful apartment. Just a beautiful, appointed apartment in on the South Island. I mean, you got a lot of good nature stuff going on. You're not going to see that big volcano erupt. You're not going to see the buried city, but you most assuredly are going to see your aunt be humiliated, yet super excited, a feeling many of us have had at one point or another.
Oh my God.
When Steve Martin signs a glossy headshot implying things happened that probably did not. But what a story.
Yes.
And now you've seen it for yourself with your own two eyes.
Yes.
Yeah. So that, my friend, is your future.
That's
enjoy.
Incredible.
Enjoy.
That's so wholesome. Everything. Thank you.
It's great. You're so welcome.
Thank you.
Friends, I'll talk to you next week on the podcast. This has been a joy. Maybe it's been such a joy, I'll just quit on this one. This feels like a good one to just retire on.
Oh, Janet.
What if this is the last one? How's it going to top? How are we going to top this?
You have to keep bringing this joy to people. This
what a pleasure. What a pleasure. Cate, thank you so much. Everybody, get out there and get that whiskey. Get that chapter.
Yeah.
Go down into Matt's body.
It's you're going to get swallowed by Matt Lillard.
I mean.
Probably.
And then cut to like Matt Lillard signing an awkward glossy photo that's like, "Dear Sandy, thanks for letting me swallow you." That's going to be great. And the cycle continues.
Always.
Thank you, Cate. Thanks, everybody. I'll talk to you next week on the podcast. The show is recorded by me and edited by Julian Burrell. And as always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi. Maximum Fun.
A worker-owned network
of artist-owned shows
supported
directly
by you.